Welcome! Take two. Welcome, Chrononauts, as we guide you through the experience of time travel using pop culture as our gratuitous nudity. We will be your constants. I am Dez.
I'm Ari.
And I'm Scott.
And this is Time Pop.
Time Pop.
Today, in the present, we will be discussing time crimes from the past, and you will listen to it in the future, which is now.
So deep. And by the way, it's officially Los Chronocrimenes. Crimeni. I took Italian. I'm going to mispronounce this.
Los Chronocrimenes.
Crimenes.
Don't ask me.
Chronocrimenes.
All of the Crimenes.
I'm going to say in Italian by accident. So yeah, you should say it. Chronocrimenes.
Chronocrimenes.
Crimenes. We're getting off to a great start. This is not a language barrier podcast.
This is a Spanish film from 2007, rated R.
Sí.
Eh? A film? Le filma? Sorry, everybody. Sorry, we're horrible people. We love you. We just got...
I'm trying to say the correct title, and I took Italian, and Italian's close to Spanish, and I say it the wrong way. I'm trying not to say it the wrong way. That's what's happening. Everyone feel better? Good.
There we go. Bingo.
Attention podcast listeners and YouTube watchers. I'm Logan, the host of Mostly Superheroes, a weekly pursuit for the world's best stories with an emphasis on live-action superhero stuff. Every week, join me, PC Mike, The Giggler, Scotty Scoop, and Carrie as we talk MCU, DCU, books, TV, movies, and more. MostlySuperheroes.com is where you want to be. Watch us on YouTube, listen where you get your podcast, and we'll see you Monday, Sunday on Patreon. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Hello? 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 If you can hear this, it's not too late. I return to warn you. This is Time Pop, a podcast that discusses time travel and pop culture. There are spoilers. I've seen the future, and nothing is sacred to these folks. Your past, present, and future are sure to be ruined. Even if you could go back in time, as I have, you will never forget what you are about to hear. You've been warned. This is Time Pop.
Promised I wouldn't jump to the end, but I just want to tell everyone this is a great movie. Language barrier aside, I really enjoyed it. I have subtitles on all of my movies all of the time.
Oh yeah, for you that's the same thing. It's funny because yeah, Ari I think was preferring the dubbed, and we got stuck with the only version we could get, and it was subtitles. And it's fast, although there's a lot of parts that don't have any talking at all.
It's yeah, this. Starts out, we're going to start at the beginning. This starts out like what I think any great time travel movie starts out as. I know Ari and I have talked about this, real slow and like a very paced movie so when they start jumping back, you know exactly where you are. So like the first half hour is very slow. It's like this chess piece is here. This chess piece is here. This slides over. You got it? Okay. You know where everyone is? Okay. Now we're going to fuck it all up. So I love the beginning. It starts out, I feel like the only reason he did this scene, it starts out with just a camera pointing what you think is the front of the car. You think you're looking out the windshield, at least that's what I thought. And a guy's getting in the car and turning it on. The radio plays through this whole fucking movie, which I was really disappointed they didn't translate any of that because there has to be something there.
Yeah, like the choices of the songs, the lyrics to the songs mean anything in context of the story.
They had a Blondie song in it.
That was the credit song, I think.
Picture this, yeah.
Picture this. But then he drives away and we're looking out the back because everything is backwards. You don't know where you're going. You're always looking at your ass in this movie. You're always...
I love that you just talk like a creepy 50s horror film guy.
Why did everything fall out of his trunk?
Again, this whole opening scene was for a movie where everything equaled something. Yeah, there was no rhyme or reason. So he could yell at his wife? I don't know. I found it interesting that he apparently loved his wife more than everything in the world because he's kind of like...
Well, actually, no, that is significant because that one thing sets up the entire story.
What thing?
Because everything falls out. Isn't that why something having to do with like why she has to get the table through and why they make the bet and why she has to go? Isn't that like significant in terms of setting off? Maybe it's not.
I guess he bought the table. The table is a thing. Everyone knows if you want to get something through a door when you're moving, you must...
Here we go. Pivot.
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 Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
All right, Ross.
Did you like the film?
We're not getting there yet, Scott.
Oh,
I told you, I'm not doing that this time because I always start talking about how much I like or don't like the film. And then within 5 minutes, we're talking about the ending.
All right, you're breaking it down. All right, break it down.
But feel free to jump in as much as you want. Please, please, please. But paper note. Where is it?
This is all happening in real time.
Paper notes were not good for another language. It did. I will jump in the beginning and say this. It's been a long time since I've watched it. And I don't even remember if I finished it because I think Ari was so mad in the middle of it that she's like, we're not doing this movie, that I'm not even sure if I hit the end of it. Seven Splinters in Time.
Oh, yeah.
This was a little.
One day we will do that movie. I will.
So tough it.
I will tough it out.
But this reminded me more of Primer. I got a lot of Primer vibes.
Wait, you thought this movie reminded you of Seven Splinters?
It did just in the like the weird character things they had to do so you could identify, like the fact that he wraps his whole freaking head in gauze instead of just,
and then takes it off again for the third version of him. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe Paradox.
I thought of Harry Potter, Prisoner of Azkaban, and I thought of Primer.
Harry Potter, really? Do tell.
Well, you know how they lay out that scene at the end, how it's like all these things happen, then they go back, and when you see how they made those things happen, the fun of like building up these random things that happen and then explaining it, filling that in.
Yeah.
The planning out of that kind of aspect, that reminded me of that.
And the short, I love a short time jump because you can follow it, you know, and they start jumping back years and decades and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this one ended up by the end, and I think I got it all. I think I actually followed this. And you saw, I think you might have mentioned, they keep on planning an American remake of this. They've been planning it since basically the year this came out.
Yeah. Cronenberg was supposed to do it.
Yeah.
I could totally see Cronenberg doing it, but it fell through.
That the Cronenberg one, I don't remember who it's attached to now, but I think it's still, someone could still make it. They own it.
Yeah.
He yells for his wife, Clara, to help him, brings her a table, and they're talking about something, but she mentions that time flies here. Got to get her little time quotes in. And then he's going up to take a nap, and he goes up to take a nap. And again, the radio is playing the whole time, this loud, blaring radio. We don't ever really figure out where it is. Like, I don't know if Clara's got a radio on where she's doing yard work. It sounds like someone's just in the other room. I kept thinking a teenager was going to pop in or something.
It's like obnoxious NPR blasted. Ari and I are like, why is he trying to nap with a blasting radio? What sense does that make?
And he's obviously having trouble napping too. Like, he's kind of restless. They keep jumping back.
Because he's blasting NPR in his ears.
I had trouble with they said that he traveled back 1 hour, right? At one point they say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the time that passes seems way longer than 1 hour because he arrives, he tries to take a nap, he spies with the binoculars, he gets his up there, like, and then it's dark.
I guess he doesn't go very far and it's like real time.
Anyway, I mean, we'll talk more about that, but I feel like it was more than an hour.
Yeah, well, and it seemed like one of those things where they chose an hour just to make it a simple chunk of time, but like, make it 2 or 3 hours. It doesn't, like, you don't have to make it 2 days to just give us a little more believability that it's light, it's afternoon and midnight to these two.
Yeah. I don't know, but I love the idea that something so simple as 1 hour and you just one thing just sets up a chain reaction and messes up. It builds up so incredibly.
Speaking of hours, do you know what Cormac did last night?
What?
Cormac made a clock.
There we go.
Me and my boy made a clock. I bought a record and I bought the clockworks and we put the clockworks in the record. And then I started it at midnight and he put the 12 on and then I spun it around an hour. I said, this is where 1 o'clock is now. So we're teaching him how to tell time. And I thought, build a clock. That's how you teach a kid how to build time, tell time.
This podcast is sponsored by Clocks by Cormac. If you want to order a clock from a 6-year-old, please feel free to call 1-800 Clocks by Cormac.
It's the second one I've made. The first one I made out of a Star Wars record and sent it to my co-host of Thank the Light. And then this one was made out of a Guardians of the Galaxy record, which was all funky and colored. And I thought I had the other one around it because it's a two record set, of course.
That's awesome.
So I have the other one.
Dope. Making clocks. That's a good idea.
Heck yeah. So the phone starts ringing. He again starts screaming at Clara, his wife, and she doesn't hear him. So he runs and gets the phone and hears some heavy breathing. And it's just like, who the hell is this? It's him. And he dials the number back, gets an answering machine, and he starts to leave a message. And then his wife scares him and he drops the phone. So then the message ends up being recorded for a long period of time. So later we have a full 3-minute recording of...
Desmond, you find this movie incredibly predictable?
Probably not the third act, right?
Yeah, only because I'm an idiot. Because I should have known that whoever ran him off the road was, if not him, someone important to the story. And in my head, I'm just like, oh, that's just some rando who ran him off the road to get him down in this gully. And it's like, no. It was...
I felt like the first 2/3 of the movie were incredibly predictable to the point where I was like bored. And the last part of it was finally not predictable.
Yeah, it was predictable too, just because they did just go slow. And like if they had introduced more characters, like if there was a whole, they were having like a big yard party or something, I think I would have been super confused. But they were really just like, you got it. We're gonna mess with your head later. So.
Right. Almost like it's supposed to be predictable. Like as soon as I saw the bandage guy, I was like, oh, that's him.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what you're supposed to think. So they could jack you up with the third act.
We get sexy time between.
Oh, yeah. While they're on the phone, she starts randomly kissing his nipples.
He and Clara, Hector and Clara get busy. Hector, alpha. And then he wanders down to his backyard, has a seat, and does he grab his binoculars right away? Is he just...
That's another thing. They were supposed to have like had sex, or she gave him a blowjob within this hour as well. Like all these things happened within that hour.
It seemed like that was a solid 5 minutes. Yeah, that must have been a quick...
She just gave him a blowjob and was like, all right, I'm going to the store now. Bye.
So what was she going to get? There was something specific they were eating. What were they having?
I don't remember what they needed.
Because they were bet. It was a bet. Oh, that's right. It was a bet. If the table fit, he had to go get dinner. Yeah. If the table didn't fit, she had to go get dinner. So the table didn't fit. So post-coitus.
But they obviously got the table through the door eventually, because that's the table they threw down the stairs.
No, it was on the stair side of the door. She took it up the stairs and it was...
Oh, through the bedroom door it didn't fit.
Couldn't. Yeah, yeah. She got it through the main door, got it upstairs, and then couldn't get in there. Hector voyeurs for a while. He just kind of stares through this. He's staring through his binoculars, and he sees this red thing out there, and he keeps kind of checking on it. And finally, this woman in the red pants flashes him. And does he see Bandage Man at any point?
No.
At there? This is...
Nope.
This is one of those movies I do want to watch one more time just to see if like his hand is on, if you can see his hand in that one scene. Because it drives me nuts in movies like this where in the third act, they show you the scene again and it's obvious where he was. But then if you actually watch it, it's not there. And it's like, continuity, people. He was always there. He was always there.
There was three of him always there.
Was there only three?
Yes.
That was something.
There's always three Hectors.
Always three Hectors.
But yeah, we'll get through it and then we can get through the...
Yeah, heck.
I like to see you do this plot in less than 10 minutes.
Oh, not going to happen. but I will get, hopefully in 10 minutes, I'll get to where it goes crazy and then we'll just...
Phase three.
We'll go nuts. So he wanders down to find Boobs McGee. And he finds her buck naked. I thought for sure she was dead. They definitely show you that she's breathing.
You're supposed to think that.
Yeah.
She's breathing.
I know.
Yeah, you can see her chest moving.
All right. The reviews I read, all other things.
When he first comes up on her, I think he thinks she's dead. But then as he walks towards her,
he thinks she's dead.
Yeah, but they clearly show that she's breathing. Plus, she wakes up and does more stuff later.
Yeah, she's not
dead. Yeah, totally. But I just mean at that moment, I knew she wasn't dead. So I knew we were going to see more of her. As he's bending down to help her, he gets stabbed in the shoulder and just runs off. And at that point, I was really weirded out because it's like this guy just stabbed him and then walked away. Like,
I got stabbed by Darkman.
I thought it was going to be a little bit of a scuffle or something. And so he runs, he's running away. So he's scared that we've realized that Bandage Man is the guy who stabbed him. And they run around and play peekaboo for a little
while. When he looks at the binoculars and then Bandage Darkman does like the fake binoculars, I was laughing hysterically. And Ari's like, I don't know if that was supposed to be funny. Maybe it was.
I laughed.
Yeah, you did.
It was funny.
There's weird little moments of humor in this.
Yeah, I get the sense they were trying to be funny and creepy at the same time.
Yeah.
He's running away from Bandage Man. He runs in up to what looks like a mansion. Like, it just looks like a big house. We find out pretty quick that this is some kind of a workstation, some hip startup new office style. And he sees on the wall the zigzag with two X's showing what looks to be a pathway, a wiggly pathway through time here and back and there again. Wanders around, finds some medical supplies. He's just making himself at home in this place, that's for sure. Like, he doesn't hesitate to go wherever he wants in this house. I guess he's looking for someone to help him, but he got real comfortable here. And he finds some bandages, wraps that around his scissor stab wound. And then, does he just grab the walkie-talkie?
Yeah, right.
He doesn't talk in it yet?
I don't remember if he did as soon as he got it.
This is where we hear the titular thunder clap that will be coming back to us over and over again. Oh, yeah, he is on the walkie-talkie because the thunder claps and he says on the walkie-talkie, what the hell was that? Mm-hmm. And the guy in the walkie-talkie says, it's just thunder. Don't worry about it. And then the guy on the other end of the walkie-talkie says, they're talking. He's like, someone's chasing me. Is he wearing bandages? Yes, he's wearing bandages. I can see Bandage Man coming towards the house. You need to get out of there. Follow the path up to the silo. Hurry, hurry, run. He runs up to the silo.
At this point, it's dark.
Yes, yes. When he comes upstairs, you're right. Yes, when he comes upstairs, it's dark. Runs up the pathway to the silo. The guy on the other end of the walkie-talkie is there. Says, hurry, get in here. And get in my little machine here so I can hide you from this guy. Does he say, I don't know if he says, I know who he is or I know what's going on or.
No, he didn't say any of that at that point.
He just says, yeah, here, get in this. And then Bandage Man is in a car at this point. He comes up the path in a car, gets out of the car, runs up, peekaboos one more time in the window. And that makes Hector One jump in the gooey clamshell. And the guy closes it and it immediately opens. We find out 1 hour later. The sun is shining now.
Earlier.
Did I say later?
Yeah.
That's not how time travel works.
No.
You never go to the future, Ari. You never.
You should.
You never go to the future.
More interesting.
Sometimes.
Always go to the past.
All right. So he wakes up an hour in the past. The guy's a little confused, apparently, right? The scientist is confused about what's going on and he has to explain who he is to the scientist.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Because the scientist from an hour ago just opens up the clamshell. It's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
There's a dude in there. And let's get into it a little bit right here, right now. We've got time travel.
Right.
We can move around a little bit. Does this Elhoven, is he in the know at this point?
You're saying, are we talking about the full story?
No. The first jump, Hector gets in, Hector goes back an hour, Hoven opens up the time machine. Does that Hoven know there's more?
Yes.
Than two Hectors? He knows there's two Hectors because he knows somebody just traveled back in time.
No, everything, this Hoven knows everything.
At this point?
Yes.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Because 40 seconds earlier.
Depends how much you want to get into right now. But
I just wanted to kind of clear my head before we move forward.
Right, you can look up timelines for this film. It's one of those films that online they have timelines for it. I don't think it's that complex that it needs to have that, but yeah.
I think it's, well, because you can actually draw it.
Yeah.
Most timelines have
draw three lines for the three Hectors.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually there's like an X or a star somewhere. It's just like, I don't know what happened here. But yeah, this one, I'll have to look it up because I just, every time I looked up something, I just saw that simple Z.
That was the worst diagram. It shows like a Z. It's like, here's one Hector, here's the other. It's like, no, that does not explain. That's not as good as an Avengers Endgame diagram.
So El Hoven, the scientist, and Hector One, who just traveled back in time, go take a little walk. Hoven explains to him, look, you just time traveled. Just chill here for an hour, and then you can go on and with your life. And they're staring at, he's looking through the binoculars at his house, seeing, or is he yet? Are they looking right there?
I mean, yeah, he's realizing that it's daytime and he's realizing that he time traveled. They're discussing that.
Right. Yeah.
He's looking at his house and seeing an hour ago.
Yeah. That's a fun moment that he's troubled by the fact that his original self is with his wife. Like it's another man.
He's totally accepting time travel as a thing, but that's a different dude boning his wife.
It's a really interesting concept. And what's unique in this film that like competitive against other versions of yourself, like a survival of the fittest. I need to like kill off the other version so I can be the one to live. Interesting concept.
That's very primer.
Yeah. It's not very multiplicity.
That's not time travel, right?
No, okay. That's just cloning.
It is though.
Because it saves him so much time.
If you just woke up out of nowhere, out of a pile of goo, you may as well time travel.
This episode is sponsored by goo.
It is. That's my second goo reference. Oh, so the time machine is this big white round bath of gooey. Oh, and that's why I think Hector says, send me back. And he says, I can't because you used all my goo or something, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the only goo I've seen used in time travel besides Minority Report, which also uses goo.
We need more goo, people.
That's the new podcast is time travel goo. Only goo films. Yeah. So anyway.
So he says, just lay low for an hour. This will all blow by. And Hoven leaves him in the original office mansion house thing below the silo. And of course, Hector gets...
That's the scene, right? This is the scene, the like breakdown time travel scene.
Yes.
Where he explains it and shows the diagram that almost every film has, the good ones, where he explains how things work and what he needs to do. He does say in this point, right, that it's like catastrophic if he officially runs into himself.
He doesn't really say that. Not catastrophic.
No,
I don't
he
feel
made
like.
It sound like if he like knowingly communicates with his past self, it will kind of, I don't think destroy like the time space continuum, but like his existence would get
all messed
fucked
up
and questionable. He made it sound like it's pretty dire. It's a thing he cannot do. It's part of why he wraps the bandages fully around his face. He realizes in that moment.
Jesus, I forgot to press play on the movie.
That's
always my kind
so,
of touch.
Yeah. So in this scene, he explains the rules. He explains the scientist is baffled, but he realizes he's like, how do I make this work? And then he realizes, oh, we just got to keep this loop going. Then this guy gets his life back. It's like, all right, we've already fucked up. How do we fix this? He shows the diagram, explains the guy. He can't affect what's going on. And also he cannot run into himself or he will like destroy his existence potentially.
I thought, yeah, I felt like it was more of, it's just going to complicate shit. Like if you just stay here, it's going to be uncomplicated. You go home to your wife in an hour and she thinks you went for a walk in the woods and we're done with this. And then these two people are going to be trapped in this loop forever, but you will go on with your life with Clara.
And that's what the guy says. All he needs to do is wait the hour. Don't run into yourself. Stay here. That guy will go back in time. Then you can take over your life. Simple enough. The guy does not listen. He hops in this car immediately and takes off.
Well, this is when he makes the call first.
Right.
First, he makes the call. And that's the call that Hector gets earlier and then drops the phone. And then this is where he gets all riled up, too, because he's listening to his wife have sex with another man.
Yeah. Fascinating. Jealousy with your past self. Again, whatever's unique about a movie, I'll take it.
Because if he wasn't accepting time travel, if he was just like, this is a trick, this is, you know, you're messing with me and that's some other dude, then maybe. But the fact that he's like, oh, yeah, no, I totally time traveled. And that's another dude.
Doesn't he hop in the car pretty much to kill his other self so he can be the only one? Isn't that kind of, they don't say it, but is that what we're supposed to think is his inciting motivation is?
Yes. Yeah. That's what I got. And so he gets in the car. He doesn't go very far because then he passes the woman on the bike and things start. Then we start seeing, I think we actually see some flashbacks. We see some like him like thinking it through and oh, the binoculars and the woman and the breasts. That's definitely her. And then he gets rammed off the road and gets rammed down the gully, bumps his head pretty bad, gets knocked out for a little while. Again, this is still part of the initial hour. You're right, Ari. This is ridiculous that this is 60 minutes.
Yeah, that was not a good writing choice.
This is one of those, it's one of those things where, like, I feel like writers forget that they have access to their first 50 pages of their script. Like, it would have, like, I can see you writing the script, be like, oh, an hour is good. But then once you start doing all this, like, okay, let's go back, let's make this 2 hours or 3 hours. And then everything falls into place. So he wakes up and now his head is gashed. He's bleeding from his head really bad. So he starts to take the bandage off his arm to wrap around his head. They focus on the blood from his arm hitting
to show the pink.
Is that what it was?
You know, at the beginning they say pink bandages. They're trying to show why he has a pink bandage, that the red blood and the white bandage, I think.
The white liquid from the...
Oh yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's what it was. Oh, but it did. But it looked like it was doing some. I guess they say pretty specifically there are zero special effects in this. It looked like they were trying to make it look like it was disappearing or something. I thought.
Wait, did he have the stab wound already? Right.
He had the stab wound in his arm. He wrapped his arm in white gauze. He got in the tub. He traveled back in time. Now he's soaked in that white liquid. When he got in the car crash and he started wrapping the now white liquid soaked bandages around his head, it turned pink.
Oh.
And they were showing the pink liquid drip onto the floor of the car and get soaked into the fibers. It wasn't disappearing. It was soaking into the fibers and just going down.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So they're just there. Yeah. And at the moment he starts wrapping his bandage injury, he hears they show a flashback of the guy saying, "You cannot be seen by yourself." And he starts wrapping it more around his face. And there's a moment of real, in that moment, he realizes, oh, I am becoming that guy. And I think there's a moment there that he's like, I have to make sure everything happens the same way.
Yes. Yeah.
But as he's putting the bandage on, that's a pretty significant moment.
Thank you, Ari. I was trying to figure out why they went with pink instead of red.
I know. What does that add to it? Unless it's mystery.
But it's white. The bandage is soaked in white goo and the blood is mixing with it.
Yeah. It's just creating a puzzle at the beginning. And then you fill in as the movie goes, all these things, how it got that way and why it happened.
So he wraps the bandage around his head, runs. The woman has come back to see if he's okay. The woman on the bike with the red pants to come back to see if he's okay. They kind of go for a little walk and this is where, like you said, everything's like really sinking in. Like, oh, because she wants to take him to a doctor. And he's like, I can't do that. That's not what happened. I know who I am now. And so he says, come with me. I need to show you something. And then that's when he basically takes her hostage and makes her recreate what he saw an hour earlier.
Right. It's fascinating, right? All these stuff that happened and you thought it happened in real life and it's very artificial. It's him just doing it because it's what's supposed to happen. That's where the film first starts getting interesting to me, right? He's just like forcing her to do that. And he's realizing I just have to do all these things. So it happens exactly the way it's supposed to. But that's theoretically how that was always going. So it never happened for real. It only happened artificially in every loop. We'll get into that later.
No, we're going to get into it right now.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
I'm starting. This movie has made me join Team Scott.
Yes, you have to. It's the only logical explanation.
About all time is happening at the same time.
Yes, because
it's a paradox.
Because I can't accept a reality where the first time she flashed him on her own.
Just to talk about that, I did some reading as well. I know, Scott, that's your job, but I will confess to you, Desmond, and to our lovely audience that I fell asleep during this movie.
I don't think that's to her being bored as much. She just had a random tired.
No, thing. I was like, yeah, like fatigued.
Yeah.
I think I was fighting a cold or something. So
because it was watched early. It wasn't watched like late at night.
Yeah, but to be fair, and I'll say this now, I know we're sitting for this day. I didn't like this movie. So I did some research as well, even though I know that's Scott's job.
No, it's okay.
So there is a theory out there that, you know, the paradox of this is it is a loop, right? It's a predestination loop time travel story, Paradox. But, you know, Desmond always has to know, where was the beginning? How does it start? So I found someone who came up with a theory for that.
I saw that too.
You did? Okay. So yeah. The theory was that there was an extra character, a separate man who was a rapist who was trying to rape this woman. And the first time Hector saw the woman taking her shirt off because the rapist told her to, and then he ventured into the woods and interrupted the rape about to happen. So the guy stabbed him in the shoulder and he ran off and then started the loop. Because then he had to bandage himself. He got into the... So that's one.
No, it's theory. A theory. Don't it's get your...
Team Ari! I'm on Team Ari now!
Don't raise your arms up. No, this... It's clearly not the meaning. That is someone that can't grasp this concept, right, trying to come up with that theory.
Right. So, but I mean, it's hard to grasp this concept that there is no beginning. How do you grasp that? Even if you have the belief that all time is happening at the same time, within that, there has to be a start.
Not if all time is always happening. Is that not a theory of Einstein?
All time is happening at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, loosely in kind of a...
I'm not sure. Theory, but I can look at
that. All time, yeah. All time has happened, will happen, has happened, and it's all happening at the same time.
I don't know if it's Einstein, but it is a real theory.
Yeah. And I, the way I think about it in my head, obviously all this stuff, we can't fathom. This is the kind of stuff that makes your brain hurt. Like if you think about infinity, or if you just think about time, like when did time start? In like just the history. And then, okay, what was before then? And then it fucks with the Earth, space or infinite, whatever. But I like to think of everything and I picture it like frequencies, vibrations, and that's easier. Like it's all happening on a different frequency vibration, but it's all happened. I've read a lot on this and it suggests more of the articles of enlightened people do suggest that this is a loop. And there's, they mentioned four different kinds of paradoxes. I don't know, Ari, if you can clear up the differences between these. There's obviously, the grandfather paradox, there's the bootstrap paradox, there's predestination paradox, and then there's like causal, well, that's a causal loop. I think those are all the ones that I saw come up. And do all of those pretty much go into the same, are those some of those just different names for the same thing?
Kind of, yeah. So this one is like a loop predestination where you were the cause of it. So it happened because of you, and because it happened, you have it happened again, and it's a loop. And with those paradox, there is no beginning.
Yeah. I want to read, I've read a lot of articles, and I have read even articles that disproves the one that Ari was bringing up, that you need, for all of this to happen, you needed all three Hectors. It wasn't just that. You still need the Hector in the red van to knock. Like, you need all of that. Everything had to happen for all of these to happen.
Yeah. So does you just have to accept that it's a paradox?
Yeah.
Right? It's not real. It's a story told and it's a paradox.
Right. And a paradox is like, like this puzzle that how could it, but it only, yeah.
So with this theory that I found online, this person, like Scott said, they have to have a beginning. There has to be a beginning. I have to be able to wrap my head around this, explain it scientifically. So they came up with this idea and yeah, it kind of works, right?
It doesn't work.
No, it could. It could. It absolutely could work. This was the catalyst that started the loop. But a paradox in itself isn't real. It's a paradox.
But even the loop after, you still need the third Hector to have the red car to crash the first one. So even if you went linear wise to number one Hector, that doesn't work without third Hector. It's a loop.
So in this one, it was the rapist was the one that crashed the car.
And the red van.
I don't know. It was a red
van. And then the other one just happened to do it the same.
I don't know if it was a red van, but yeah. So this guy's theory, Scott doesn't approve, but I get why people need to know how it started.
More of the articles suggest it's a loop and they all bring it up. And it's funny when you read the reviews, there's people that like the comments like, no, but that doesn't make sense because how did it first happen? And there's people that only thinking linear and refuse like this movie sucks because that doesn't make sense. You just have to
accept it. It's like, you just have to accept Jesus Christ without any evidence or unknowing. Right? It's a paradox.
Predestination, guys. Remember that one? Same thing.
Faith.
Speaking of Jesus Christ.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
I realize.
I was kidding.
So we have done so many movies, Ari.
Yeah.
Is there one where there is a first time where someone kicks it off?
Back to the Future.
Yeah, but it's not a loop.
But that's not a causal loop.
Oh, yeah. Is there any loop where it kicks it off? In some of your, like Edge of Tomorrow, I think that starts and then the loop happens. But that's a day. That's a loop day.
That's different. Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Like, I would love to see a movie exactly like this, except for we see the first time it kicks off.
What about Looper? Was Looper always a loop, or would that start linear? And though a closed loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's different. It's just, it can't, what you're suggesting doesn't make sense.
Yes, it does. It's the,
you want it to start linear and then it becomes a loop. And in this first, but that's how it would always have happened.
Yeah, that's the thing is.
And the loop causes itself.
That's as you're telling the story, it's the first time. Once you get to a certain point, part of the story, it's now a loop and the loop has always been there. It can't exist. If it's truly a loop paradox, you can start telling the story as if it was the first time. But then when the reveal happens that, you know, it was you the whole time, or this guy, you know, was the one who stabbed you, and then revealing that it's a loop, then it's been a loop the whole time.
What's my quote? What's happened has happened, will always happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did some more cool research. Ari, have you heard of the Observer's Paradox?
Mm-mm. No.
So here, there's a little stuff I came up with. They say... The young woman.
Oh, is that with the Schrodinger's?
Yeah.
Schrodinger. How do you say it? Schrodinger's cat.
Schrodinger's cat. Right. The young woman is a picture of Schrodinger's cat in her shirt, they say, which is a reference to the Observer's Paradox, first proposed by an Austrian scientist, which states that an object or outcome of an event is not determined until being observed. A cat placed inside a box with a device which may or may not poison is theoretically both dead and alive simultaneously until the box is open and observed, forcing the object in one of these possible states. The quantum mechanics aspect is the girl. Like, they're saying that this movie, the truth is always the perception of the guy. Like, when he sees the girl as dead, and we believe that until we find out at the beginning when she's naked and dead out there that she's not dead, but that's how he sees her, and that's what we take as truth. Or at the end, when he sees his dead wife on the ground, and in the moment that is that truth, and we find out that was never his wife. That was the other woman that was meant to emplace his life. And that's kind of an interesting aspect of the
apparently
film.
Apparently, the writer and director of the movie took that theory to heart when writing this script.
Right.
Oh.
It depends on what Hector sees.
Yeah.
Oh.
Whether she's dead or alive.
Desmond, do you know about Schrodinger's cat?
Yes. Cat's dead.
Adorable cat.
Cat's.
So it all depends on what Hector sees, whether they're dead or alive. The theory, the film is you have free will within the limits of your own perception.
I'd buy that.
That's not a time travel theory, though.
No, that's going into some other stuff. If you haven't seen what happens inside a room, you can change what happens there. But if you've seen the inside of the room, you cannot change anything.
Because
there's a lot with just ideas of free will. But with him having to do whatever happens, like when you're in a loop theory, the idea of free will versus
there
time
is free will.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and he thinks that, right? Even as he goes into Hector 3 and he thinks he's going to fix stuff. And it's like, no, dude, you've always done this. You're just keeping... Yeah, it's this illusion of free will, but he always thought he had free will. So
I don't believe in free will, but that's for a different reason.
Because all time is happening and has always happened the way it's happened.
Because I try to diet and it never sticks.
Because I just
diet.
at any given point, you just only have so many options based on every decision you've made that's brought you to this decision. And, you know, every decision is made based on what you can do. And, you know, based on money, time, relationships, work, just whatever. And it's just like, you think you have a choice, but you're going to go to bed and wake up and go to work. That's not a choice. that's not free will.
But in every second, there's an infinite number of choices, whether you pick up that glass of water now, whether you wait 3 minutes, whether you drink all of it, whether you decide to take a poop, whether you decide to watch a movie.
You are always going to drink the glass of water on the toilet, Scott.
On the toilet?
Yeah. So Hector forces her to flash. Hector 2 forces her to flash Hector 1 and then drags her into the woods. Or no, he tries to drag her into the woods. She won't go. They tumble. She passes out. So then he drags her back to the spot where Hector 1 finds her and undresses her. So she is...
Exactly as he found her.
And then he hides until Hector 1 finds her, stabs him with the scissors. Oh, the scissors he got from Flat.
Her bag, yeah.
From Flasher Lady.
So at that moment, you realize he's trying. He knows he has to do everything exactly as it's supposed to be. I think that was explained to him in the science breakdown part.
Yes. And then he stabs Hector 1 with the scissors, runs off. He's looking around for the exact place to play peekaboo with Hector 1.
Oh, yeah. That was a very funny moment. He tries. He doesn't know where he's supposed to do peekaboo. So he tries it like three or four different times.
And then finally gets it right. He runs to his house. Oh, no, Hector 1 runs to his house. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Hector 1 takes off to his house. Hector 2, Bandage Man, follows him to the house.
It's worth mentioning also in this like hero's journey, how jacked up this guy is getting, right? He first, the first Hector 1 got the stab in the arm. Now he's gone back in time. He's still nursing that. Gets in the car accident. Now he's got the big head wound. He's got the bandage all over. Then he wrestles with her and he takes a tumble and he kind of like seems like he breaks his nose and it starts getting bloody around there too. So the injury, this guy getting disfigured and getting the crap beaten out of him is building up. And, it, you know, again, I just like it as the way like you just go back in time 1 hour, one thing. It's up this chain reaction of how messed up everything gets.
You're so apt. So Bandage Man runs in the house, gets hit with the table, the titular table, and then he tumbles down the stairs, he gets himself up, chases after, he thinks he's chasing Hector the whole, or does he, Bandage Man?
He thinks topless girl is in the house because she ran away. He's trying to get her. He doesn't want her to call the police.
That's right. He just doesn't want her to mess up the loop. So he's trying to get her. In chasing her out of the house and up a level outside, she takes a tumble and falls.
When he sees his wife, in the house, right? Or does he not see her? No, he doesn't.
Bandage Man doesn't.
He doesn't. You're right. He sees feet on a roof. He tries to grab the feet. The person takes a tumble. And when he looks down, it's flat face down on the ground, the back of what looks like his wife.
Yes. Wearing his wife's jacket with his wife's cute little short haircut.
Right. So now things have gotten very ugly for our hero. He thinks what he thought was topless girl was actually his wife. Now she's dead. And now he thinks he's got to fix everything and he's got to bring his wife back.
That girl is not smart.
I know.
I'm like, you could have gotten away so many times. I'm sorry. I have a problem with her character.
The super grotesque guy. She's like, a really nice person.
Come on.
Like she hangs with the grotesque version of it. Yeah, whatever. We'll get into that.
Yeah, they definitely kind of like put us in a situation where there's only two places to go. There's the silo or this house. So for whatever reason.
She is the true victim of this story in many ways.
She is absolutely.
She is drawn into this loop forever for no reason.
So we hear the police at this point. So Bandage Hector runs to Hoven, runs to the tub, runs to the time machine, and we hear the police. That's right. I was wondering if that comes back, and that I think that comes back.
So now we're entering phase three.
Now we have Hector 3,
where he's telling him that they got to fix it and he wants to go back. And Hoven's like, dude, you don't. He's like trying to tell him not to do it. He's going to make everything worse. And eventually, while he's talking to him, our Hector starts realizing that, like, wait a minute, you're trying to trick me again. There's more you need to tell me. And that's when he spills the beans, like, yes, there is a third version of you that has already told me you sounded desperate not to let you go back in time again. And then now he's piecing together. He's like, wait, this third version. So you've known all along. You were pretending that you didn't know me when I first came back. There's a third version that went back even before the second version. And so this is the mind fuck.
And this is when we learn true primer style that he can only send Hector back 40 extra seconds because that's when he turned the time machine on.
Right.
Or something like, or that's when he closed the time machine. Like Hector can't come out of the time machine before it's been generated.
Yeah. That's kind of how he slipped. He said 40 seconds. Like, well, when did I come back? He's like 40 seconds.
40 seconds. And there are, so every Hector and the scientist have a walkie-talkie. How is each Hector able to talk to the scientist without the other Hector hearing it?
They placed that earlier in the film. There's a moment where he said, when he first talks in the walkie-talkie, he's like, wait, what did you say? And the guy said, no, nothing. Let's come back to the tower. And then later on, you see that the third Hector had been talking to him. And then Hector 2 gets on and says, what was that? And then Hoven said nothing. So that's all carefully. This was still pretty meticulously done.
Wow.
It was intelligently made. They've covered their bases. And in fact, even in the third one, he like destroys the walkie-talkie. So he thinks that this won't happen. And later on, he finds extra walkie-talkies in the van that he takes. And that's great because at this point, they haven't described like that red van at the beginning. All the mysteries that you thought were covered by the second one, they didn't cover everything. And so this third version of himself covers the red van. It also covers like with the wife and the hair.
So yeah, this is where my notes get sketchy. I just had to start watching it and try my best to pay attention.
Yeah. So this is the mindfuck part. This is where you realize that all the reactions the doctor's been having along have been fake, and that there was always a version of Hector that had already told him that before even the first initial meeting, that there was another sublayer going on the entire time. And that's where you start getting very confused for a moment in this film.
So let's tell this from the scientist's point of view.
All right. You want to just lay out, like, chronologically, timeline-wise, how it looks to the scientist?
Yes.
Okay.
The scientist is at work on the weekend when he's not supposed to be. He's not going to be invited to the big time travel extravaganza in a month. So he's sneaking around here to see some stuff and see what it's all about. He fires up the time machine.
Yeah. And the first person he meets is Hector 3.
Hector 3.
Who I guess breaks down for him. Hey, there's going to be time travel. Remember, he doesn't have a lot of time. He's like, a version of myself is about to come. Be surprised. Guide him to this, you know, tell him what to do and to stay back and come to the silo, all that stuff.
He can't.
Wait, you know, he tells him.
Oh, no, because.
No. He tells him first.
Hector 2 is about ready to come out.
Yeah, he's going to hear him first on the walkie-talkie, right? That's how he's going to hear it first. Or does he come out?
So Hector 3 comes out. Like, Hector 2, 3, and 1 should come out of that time machine in 120 seconds.
Right. So anyway, he warns him of all that. So the scientist, I think he says first, you're going to hear on the walkie-talkie, right? It's not the time machine first, right? It's first like, hey, you're going to hear someone on the walkie-talkie, guide him to the silo.
Yes. But that's Hector 2 telling him that, right?
Oh, that's a sign of a good film.
Yes.
If we can't fully, I had it. I'm just trying to, and what did we watch the movie 2 days ago?
Yes.
That's why it's not yesterday. I'm just trying to remember if he tells he's going to come in a second, if he is in the machine or it's first by walkie-talkie. I guess it would be.
It's got to be the walkie-talkie.
Got to be the walkie-talkie.
Yeah. Hector 1 on the walkie-talkie.
And then he has to be surprised in the machine when the guy pops up.
No, but because Hector 1 on the walkie-talkie, that's an hour later. He gets in an hour later. So Hector 3, Hector 2, Hector 1.
Hector 3, 2, 1, right? That would make sense.
Come out of the thing. And then he's got to wait around an hour for the walkie-talkie talk. And then most of the walkie-talkie talk happens towards the end of the hour. That's when at some point each Hector is like, either there's a Hector saying there's a guy chasing me, which that's Bandage Man. Coming back to fix stuff.
This is great that you said to do this. This is the part that needs a diagram. When you try to do the scientist point of view, it's very easy to do the Hector point of view, but the scientist one is harder.
So when Hector 3, 3, 2, 1 come out in succession, and it's nighttime. Oh, okay. Then
anyway, 3 sets it up, right?
Yeah.
He says, I'm breaking it down for you, you know, do all this stuff. And then he goes out, he needs a vehicle. He can't interfere with the other vehicle. And this is when the red van is introduced.
Yes.
And he doesn't do it to recreate stuff, but he accidentally, like, oh, he wants to kill himself, but he hits the car, which starts the whole thing.
No, he's not trying to kill himself. Oh, kill Hector too. Kill Hector.
Yes. Now he's trying to save his wife. He wants to destroy everything. So he hits him with the car, not realizing he's doing exactly what starts the whole thing.
Yes.
Some of it in the middle.
And winds up driving himself off the road.
Yeah.
And he gets really messed up.
Yeah. Now he's got more injuries, right? At that point. Yeah.
And he gets a walkie-talkie.
His face is disfigured and swollen. And he finds walkie-talkies in the back of the truck. And he says, what the guy said earlier, you had a desperate message, like everything failed. And that's when he said, I'm a failure. This is all going wrong. Try to stop myself if you can. I'm going to do what I can. And I think he's just trying to go to save his wife.
Yes. And how he saves his wife is by setting up. Go ahead.
Well, he goes back to the site of the incident with the naked girl. She had gotten up already. He pretends to be another victim of.
Oh, he hides his wife. He sees his wife's okay. So he doesn't.
I'm saying before that, Hector 3 meets up with the topless girl. She had moved now. She had gotten, everyone else had left. She woke up. She was just unconscious, got dressed. Runs into her and he's like, his face is all bruised. He has no bandage. So she doesn't know it's Bandage Man.
Oh,
he's like, yeah, right. I'm a victim of that guy too. And he like, she's like already said, has bad judgment. Like, yeah, you seem like a nice guy with your face all jacked up. I'll help you out.
So far, everything's going great with all these random dudes I'm hanging out with. So Hector still doesn't know what he's going to do, but he's going to save his wife.
I think he knows.
So he hides his wife in the shed.
Well, he goes back to the house with topless lady.
Right. At this point, I think he's still planning on saving everyone. He's just planning on killing Hector too, to get his wife and this woman safe.
But he meets his wife. His wife is there. She's surprised. He says, I'm going to save you. Go to the shed. Do not come out of there. That way you're going to live.
No matter what you hear.
So the warrior's journey, his face is so swollen and jacked up in so many places, and the girl still trusts him. And so he tells her he's going to save her, and he cuts the back of her hair to look like his wife. So now his plan is he's going to replace the woman who fell, who he thinks is his wife, with this girl. So he's fully okay to sacrifice this poor girl that has already been meant to undress at like knife point. So him being our hero feels a little questionable at this point.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty shady.
Well, it's already happened, right? She's already
done. Yeah, it's already happened.
Yeah, and he's kind of realizing it. I mean, at this point, he's kind of understanding the causal loop thing. He's had a long conversation with scientist guy. And
he doesn't think it. But that's what they're saying. The whole reality of his perspective. He thinks his wife died and now he's replacing her. Well, he didn't realize that that was always the case. That it was always the woman. That's the whole Schrodinger bit. But yes, so he convinces the girl that the wife is in hiding. In this, you find out that he's the one who hit Hector too with the chair running up the stairs.
Yeah, with the table.
He tells the girl, the innocent girl, to go on the roof because that's where she'll be safe, which again is very manipulative. He's just trying to save his wife and have everything go the same.
Yeah, because now he needs, because he can't just kill Hector too. I can't remember why, but if he kills Hector too, see, couldn't he get out of this loop if he killed Hector too right now?
No, because Hector, well, I mean, Hector too would never have become him, which is Hector 3.
Oh.
It has to happen that way for him to be, I mean, he wanted to save his
life. If he kills Hector too, does he disappear?
I would think like they all disappear. It gets very complicated.
Hey, science lady.
Yeah.
If Hector 3 kills Hector 2, do all Hectors disappear from existence?
I don't know.
And that's why maybe the diagram is good. All three Hectors are so essential to all of each other's lives and the story and everything happening.
In the sense of ripple effect, no. But in a sense of...
The loop. The grandfather paradox.
The loop, it would stop. The loop would stop.
Like think of predestination if the Ethan Hawkeye had killed a version of himself.
Yeah, the loop would stop. Anytime
isn't that what he did at the end of the movie?
Anytime you disrupt a main part of the loop stops. There still will be more than one of you that exist and continue on.
Oh, because if he...
It's not a butterfly effect.
If he kills Hector too, does his wife die in the next loop?
Or if he killed Hector too, then that's how it always would have been. Yeah.
Yeah, right now he's just acting. He's just playing his part. He's bought in.
Right. He thinks he's substituting someone so that he can go with time, but his wife can live. Anyway, that all happens when he looks down and sees the dead body and realizes that that was always the other girl. There's some moment of like awareness. Like now it's funny. At the beginning, he has no idea what's going on. By the end, he's kind of nonchalant about all the drama. His face is beaten up. And it's great because now he's kind of confident. He's like, yeah, I got this. This is just how it goes. I got it. Like he's the warrior's journey, the hero's journey, although he's not a hero. And he's also saved his wife, so he feels good, but he's also exhausted and like realizes how this is how it always has been. But for the first time in the movie, now we're in like a future path.
Yes.
Now it's moving forward. It's something we've never seen. Everything's been covered. And I think he's just tired. He just brings out his little chair. He sits there with his wife. He knows the police are coming. And he's like, let's just enjoy this view for a moment before it's about to rain.
At the end, does the really beat up Hector guy die from his injuries?
No.
He's possibly arrested.
Yeah, I think he's going to jail. But it's like, he feels he's like, I've saved my wife's life. At least I didn't drag her too much into this. The cops are coming. He's not trying to run. He knows the cops are coming. He's like, let me just take a moment. I'm going to be with my wife. Could just sit here in my lounge chair, enjoy my view. He's like, it's about to start raining, but he's also going to.
But if he doesn't die, then there will be an endless amount of Hectors.
No.
No, because they all feed back into the loop.
One and two will always be doing the loop, and three is the one that comes out on the other end.
Yeah.
Doesn't two become.
Two becomes three.
If two becomes three, then three gets out at the end, then there's an unlimited three.
I kind of look at it like a
no,
it's like a script three, and then finally it loops and then there's just one left to kind of move forward.
You go into the hour, you live that hour three times.
Now three is moving on. Two goes into three, and now three is moving forward. Two is always going to go into three.
Yeah.
And three is moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's not more than one person at that. Throughout the loop, there's always three, and at the end, there's just one.
Yeah.
This is where a diagram might
help. It's a closed loop?
Yes.
So it's a single time loop.
The only way there would be more Hectors going forward is if for some reason Hector 1 or 2 decided not to go through with it, but we've already decided that that would destroy the fabric of space and time.
Yeah.
If 1 and 2 didn't do what they were supposed to do, but...
I my memory of this movie, the end of the movie is a little hazy, so I cannot confirm with what you're saying, but if...
I mean, 2 went back in time to become 3.
Unless 3 goes back in time... or 3 dies, there's going to be continuously endless amount of 3s.
Not at the same time.
No.
If 2 becomes 3.
2 goes back.
2 goes back an hour to become 3.
To become 3. And then 3.
So at the end of this hour, 3 is the only one left because 2 goes back.
Right. But then 1 becomes 2.
Right.
Which feeds
And then 2 becomes 3.
Right. So at the end, now 3 moves on once they've left us.
Right. So then 1 becomes 2, 2 becomes 3, 3 moves on. 1 becomes 2, 2 becomes 3, 3 moves on.
Yeah, it keeps happening.
Right. So there's endless amount of threes.
Well, all the time is always happening. The loop is always happening.
Unless there's just...
Well, that's like saying there's an endless amount of Aries because every second is a different Ari.
No. I'm saying, so there's either an endless amount or there's 3.
There's 3. In that hour, there's 3. In that hour, there's... Before that hour, there's 1. After that hour, there's 1. Within that hour, there's 3.
So 1 becomes 2, 2 becomes 3, 3 resolves it and sits in a chair and watches for the rain. But in that moment, while he's sitting in the chair, there's still a 1 and a 2. But what happened to 1 and 2?
They're back an hour.
They became a 2. They're back an hour. They're in that. They're always going to be back in that time. But in this present moment, there's only 3. If we had a piece of paper, maybe 1. 1 becomes 2, but then there's another 1. 1 becomes 2, but there's another 1. Back then. Right. 2 becomes 3. But there's no 1 becomes 2, there's no more 1. 1 has become 2. 1 is only back there. Back in time. So there's 3 total. There's 3 in total. And they're in the loop. All three are there at the same time. Are you drawing out, doesn't it? I almost like I picture it like there's a line, a loop, and then a line coming out. So it means like a script 3 with a line coming out of one end of the line and the other.
So that is 7 o'clock and 8. That is 7 o'clock. That is 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock. And that is 1 Hector becomes 2. All right, look at it.
Let's try to do
it
in my head. 1. 1 is always going to become 2. Okay. 1 does not hang out. 1 is always following in their backpack.
So 1, and feel free to edit this out while
oh, this is all going to make it.
While I figure this out.
This is the sign of a good film.
Attention.
1 gets in the machine and goes back, and he can now see himself. Right? So right. Right. But that future one of himself he sees will eventually become right. Right. 2. And 1. 2 goes back and becomes 3. 1 becomes 2. But 2 now sees another 1.
At 7:30, there's always 3.
Right. And then 3 makes it out and is sitting and waiting. Meanwhile, 2. 3 goes back in time. 2 goes back in time and becomes 3. Right. So now there's 2 threes. Okay, there's 3 and 2. And 2 eventually becomes 3. Yes, 2 becomes 3. Right. So as he is sitting out there, 2 is running away to become 3. Right. So they're there at the same time, but 2 is about. So the 3 sitting there waiting, 2 becomes 3, so now there's 2 threes. No, but then 3 is going to go back and fill this guy's path. So look at that. Number 3 is going to start his whole path. He's not going to be here at the same time. 3 is going to go through with the life path. 3 now is in. The future. The one he hasn't seen in the past. Right. There's a 2 at the same time. There's that 3 sitting in the chair. And now he's going back in time. The 2 is. The 2 is. 2 becomes 3. Not at the same time. 3 is going to throw itself. Right. By the time he gets to the 3 point, 3 is moving on. Right. So now there's 2 threes. Well, the time is always going on. Yeah, think about it. One timeline. 3 and a 3 sitting waiting. 3 coming. 3 is all the time. Continue to move on. Yeah, so when 3 is in jail a day from now, this other guy just came 3 sitting in the chair, but they're different times, not the same moment. It's the same day, it's just an hour difference. But they're never in the same moment at the same time. But they're in the same space time.
Not 3.
In the same, they're in the same space time.
Not 3.
An hour off.
Yeah. When 2 and 3 go back in time for an hour, when 1 and 2 go back in time, there's only 3. And then 3 grows up an hour, and 1 and 2 go back again. And, there's, and then 3 grows up an hour, and 1 and 2 go back an hour.
They're in the same chair.
No, because it's
not. They're not in the same time.
There's not.
That's like suggesting, if we suggest my theory is true, and all time has always happened, the Desmond of an hour ago, and there's a Desmond of 5 years ago, doesn't mean there's a Desmond now. In this moment, there's only one Desmond. But there's a Desmond of an hour ago, sure. And we're saying it's always happened. So you're saying it's a different timeline?
No.
It's a looping timeline. It's one timeline that's looping. But it's all happened. It's always all happened. But 3 gets out of the loop and continues forward with life. It's part of the loop. Yeah, but the loop, they're always going to come in. So everything's going to feed into it. They're always going to come in. But there's
not more than one. Yesterday's Ari is always going to become today's Ari. That doesn't mean there's multiple Ari.
Yeah, so. At one point, there are 3 people in the same hour. At the same moment, there are 3 people existing right, at the same right, moment. Right, but okay. Not at the end. Okay. So if 3 people exist, if 3 people exist, if there are 3 of us sitting in this couch right now, yes. What happens to the other 2 for you to continue on? They go back
an hour.
So they're not at the same time at the end. I don't have the brain power right now for me to explain this correctly. And I'm kind of baffled. You're going like back to the future theory. There's several Marty flies. At one point, there are. Right.
And not forever. But then in 19, when he goes back to 1985 and lives his life, there's only one Marty. That's like saying every Marty that comes back to 1985 lives in the same time as Marty. Like, yes. Like,
this is the way back to the future. I think what you're trying to bring up. This is back to the future. We realize there might be 2 Martys that are living out this life, but this one covers this.
How?
Because they go back to become a person. So there's only one going on. They're repeating this pattern. There's only one that's going on in that moment. That instant. You want to think of it as like a twisted hose and the water's always going through.
There's a twisted hose.
We don't do a diagram. So but if you go back, there's 3 here.
There's only one here and there's only one here.
And then one. Every time one of them becomes 3, they move on, right?
That's yesterday.
Hey, it's all one day.
Yeah, but they're not.
The Hector that's in jail, they're not going to catch up to him. They're not going to catch up to him.
Why?
Because time moves at time speed.
Because yesterday's Desmond is not going to catch up with today's Desmond.
But if today's Desmond goes back to the same moment as yesterday's Desmond, there's 2 Desmonds in the same moment.
Right. But that Desmond is going to time travel in a day, leaving me to continue on alone.
Yeah.
oh my God, why am I not explaining this in a way that is, you guys are getting it.
So here we're saying, after, when all this is done, in one instant in time at the end, there's okay, only
I'm
one.
I'm going to use props. I'm going to use props. And I apologize if this is not interesting to, I'm amazed that you're going to keep all this, but okay.
Hey, everybody, timepoppod@gmail.com. Timepoppod@gmail.com. Write in and tell us what you think. Let's see your props.
Right. He travels back in time. And now there's two of them.
Number two?
All right, sure. Two and one. Right. Whatever you want to call it. Okay. Now these guys are moving forward. This one travels back in time. This one travels.
One's going to come to.
Okay. Now there's two in the same moment. Let's just say there's two. Let's just keep it at two. This is 1 o'clock and this is 12:45, right? Okay. They're moving forward.
Well, that's not exactly true. He's moving back to move forward. He's going to become this.
So he goes back in time and it's here. They're equal, right? It's an equal time. He goes back. He's seeing him. They're equal time, right? And they're moving forward and they're doing things.
And when he moves forward, he's going to become this.
He's
moving forward.
He's the original. He comes here. Now they're all equal, right? They're equal. Now this one's going to then go back and be equal to this one, right? The original spot. And then move forward.
Equal with...
And this one's going to go back and be equal with all three of them.
I don't know the equal
because means. Because if you call this noon, you say if you apply this as noon, right? So now at one point, there's three of them,
yes,
in the same space.
But I'm also moving to three of them.
Okay. So then how do they get out of this?
Because they become each other.
Because
predestination?
This one continues, this one goes back. So this one continues.
They all become each other.
Okay, this one goes back, this one goes back. But then this one comes
circle,
three,
circle.
And then this one continues. And now
no, but they're not at the same time. You will come three. And then there's three that, if you just take a time constantly flowing, there's three that just sit on the lawn. That guy is already in jail a day from now. Three times coming on. He's just this, maybe this two just became three. Wait, that guy that became three an hour ago is moving on.
Because this one,
I know what you're saying, but it's only because they become each other. That's only because of the way this film works.
And unfortunately, even if you don't like the movie, you've got to appreciate the fact that it has this discussion makes this a good film.
Well, I mean,
and
is,
it's not too loophole-y.
This is a pretty common paradox.
But I'm just trying to grasp my head around the fact that because they were here, but
the way their life path takes them to become each other. I know you're talking about the idea when you go back and see all those carbon copies, but because their path goes into each other, by the end, they're not in the same space at the same time.
Because
the way they become each other.
This
because
one
they go back,
this one.
So that's why they're not in the same space.
And this one goes back.
7 o'clock is not the same as 7 o'clock RE is different from 8 o'clock RE is different from 9 o'clock RE is different from 10 o'clock RE. They're not all occupying the same day at the same time.
It's a loop. It keeps happening. So whenever two becomes three, it's 9 o'clock. And then say that three comes on 10 o'clock when the next version comes out, it's 9 o'clock. And they're never in the same time. The 10, 11, just time is always flowing.
I see
what now RE at 9 o'clock goes back to 8 o'clock and then lives the rest of her life happily ever after.
I see what it is. It's because they're doing the exact same thing.
Yes.
If at any moment,
yes,
one of them does one little thing different,
yes,
then there would be more than one.
Exactly. Well, no, she's
if we don't travel.
But this is a loop. But this is a, it has always happened this way. It keeps looping. It keeps happening. It is a grandfather
okay.
paradox.
I
predestination.
I get it now. Yeah.
They're always doing the same path. And I can just see like water or like a hose just going through the loop, coming out, and it just keeps happening.
Let's see what Roger Ebert has to say.
I'm a visual person. I needed these.
Yeah. And also, I think maybe the sleeping through it.
And I didn't really see the movie.
Yeah. So I think that's why I get what you're saying, though, because didn't we figure out that there is two Marty McFlys that like move on, like one is just kind of screwed? I think I remember that.
Yeah, I remember you guys talking about that. Yeah. So that this doesn't
have that
fall under the all time is happening at the same time.
Yeah, it has to. That's why even the people that have the weak argument, it doesn't make sense. Because a part of what she's saying, and also with like that red van in the beginning, this is a loop. This is not like where there was a rapist first and now we've all replaced it. This all three of these feed into each other. And looking at this is a very intelligent movie. And it starts off with some very simple stuff, but that's where it's interesting.
There's got to be other movies that have taken this on. And I think where I was getting hung up on was a lot of them take care of the paradox by killing, you know, their duplicate or whatever. They take care of the loophole by killing them. So I was like, oh, that means that there's going to be. And so I was getting my paradox.
Okay.
Can you remind me what happened at the end of Predestination? Did they take their life and eliminate all versions of themselves?
No, they moved on.
They let it.
They say kind of the same thing.
So it's the same kind of a thing.
So that's what, yeah. If I could relate this film to three films, it'd be Predestination, Primer, and Harry Potter 3 for different reasons.
Yeah.
Let's hear what Roger Ebert has to say about it a little bit.
Because he knows about time travel.
Time travel in the movies is always about a paradox, and it always drives me nuts. Sometimes I enjoy that in the same way I enjoy chess, and that's a compliment. Time Crimes is like a temporal chess game with nudity, voyeurism, and violence, which makes it more boring than most chess games, but less boring than a lot of movies. I guess you can make up the rules of time travel as you go along. But whatever they are, they have to be inexorable, and there have to be dire consequences when a mere mortal rips the fabric of space of the space-time continuum.
Yeah, this paradox you can do a lot with.
Yeah.
I personally did not like this movie. I mean, I was, you know, not feeling well and fell asleep, but it also was just kind of boring, and he didn't really care about the characters. And I think the low budge was a little distracting to me. I think I said to Scott, I was like, this looks like it was shot in the 70s.
And he's also, I love that he's kind of an anti-hero. It's like a schlub, you know, that was intentional. He's just like this schlubby dude.
Totally.
And but by the end, he's got like the heroes, like he's kind of a warrior by the end when he sits in that chair. He's seen and done a lot in his 1 hour.
That is not someone who I wanted to see his nipples. His nipples. I did not want to have to see that man's nipples.
So she says low budget. This is interesting to mention, right? Des, you probably saw this. Budget $2.6 million. Box office
$564,000. Oh, boo.
Made a quarter of the film. I think it's still regarded as a great time travel film afterwards, but
yeah, I think it's made a lot of money afterwards.
Yeah, won some awards. You know, there's minimal loopholes to it if you buy into the theory and obviously the paradoxes, which is something to say for time travel films. It's pretty rare for us.
I think the loopholes come with that woman's decisions.
Yes. Yeah, her. Oh my God.
But necessary for the story.
Even after the first creepy guy that like forces her to do all those things, she takes this other beaten down guy. I mean, I guess she thought he was another victim. And in that moment of terror, but then goes to a weird house and allows her hair to be cut by this super bruised face creepoid.
So I'm mixing all of our podcasts now, Scott. I don't care. Rotten Popcorn, Rotten Tomato. I wanted to hear some people who really hated this movie, just because it is probably very complicated for some. The main character was such a moronic, unlikable psychopath that it became hard to watch. This movie falls into the category of movies where everything could have been solved in 5 minutes if the characters would have just talked. But no, that's not an option. Big Galba.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something about, you know, watching a movie to be, you know, escapism, to kind of just... I understand if it's time travel, it's going to be complicated, but, you know, at least give us someone pretty to look at.
I think we like
it. Or like charming, or like at least a good actor.
They have this like boring schlub. They're like nothing, like their house is boring. It's so simple. And then it becomes this clusterfuck of epic proportions. It's like the film that we shot.
Well, I was sorry she was used as a tool for the plot, but as a guy, I thought red pants was gorgeous. So
no, she was hot. No, she had nice tits, but the main guy, it's like, at least make him a better actor.
you think a haircut and a makeover would fix that? Okay, let's see if I hit all of my my bullet points here.
By the way, I read in one of the reviews, you know, depending on this was not from like the director, this was someone reaching, but they're like, the film is about infidelity. You know, he likes, it's his voyeurism and that starts this whole thing, and then trying to keep secrets. I thought that was a bit of a reach.
Yeah.
But you know, that's film analysis for you.
I loved this movie. This is the weird kind of movie that you're not going to come across in a lot of circles that, like, you know, I don't know. I like the B movie version of time travel movies a lot. I like no special effects, so they don't get bogged down spending a bunch of money on lasers. And they're just like, okay, we just need to film this scene and then loop it around and keep making it work. And, you know, as far as, yeah, the characters were a little unlikable and all that stuff. The movie itself, you know, was less than awesome. But as a time travel movie, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I thought it was awesome. Even if it was a little predictable and not totally mind-blowing, like and it also just makes me think, like, yeah, there is no beginning, middle, or end. It's just all happening all the time.
Yeah. I mean, the third phase of it was in, you know, it reminds me also of Time Lapse, right? There's like the film, and then you think you know what's going on, and you find out there was like that little surprise ending, that there was a third, more manipulative thing happening the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's got elements of that. So that was fun. Yeah, it was predictable. I knew bandage stuff, but then third round, then that got a little interesting. It took a while to get there. So it's not like entertaining, exciting film, but
not entertaining.
It's got some intelligence behind it. So I like it. Even like the arguments we're having about it just shows. And with
we're arguing about the paradox.
Yeah.
Itself. This movie, I agree with you, Desmond, as a time travel movie is perfectly fine. You know, it does the paradox well. As a movie in general, as a whole, I thought it was not good, not entertaining. There's way better movies that do this paradox better, in my opinion.
Well, Ari, well, here, let's close this out for a minute. If you can see your house, even if a creepy guy is chasing you, you get in this time machine.
Well, that's another thing. The guy got stabbed, and instead of running back towards his house, he just ran in the other direction. The motivation for things was weak.
Yeah.
Like, the writer could have done a better job of doing more believable motivation for things.
Yeah.
Well, explain that he's lost in the woods. Like, that should have been more.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I was like, is that his house or is that another one? Like, he ran from the guy. We're assuming he got lost and he went to the first house, but it wasn't explained that well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the question, Des?
I'm always trying to reword my usual question of, would you use this time machine? And, you know, if I've seen it in use and I know it functions, then I get in it probably just to dick around. I probably don't go back much more than an hour. But in the plot of this movie, the motivation of this movie, I will take my chances with Bandage Guy.
Yeah, I mean, to get into the motivation to get into this machine full of liquid and then have the top be completely closed on you where you're submerged under this liquid is like, come on, no one's going to do that.
No way.
They're going to find a phone and call the police. They're not going to climb into a thing.
Yeah, if I was running away, I'm already freaked out. And someone says your best option is climbing into this clam with liquid. I wouldn't have.
No, nobody would have.
Stick a monkey in there and send it back in time.
If it had been more of like an accident, like he tripped and fell in and top closed and then it turned on, that would have been more believable to me.
Or even just make it like, I don't know why I keep bringing this movie up lately. I'm gonna have to rewatch it. Paradox, where it's just kind of like you're in an area of static electricity and that sends you back. Like, you don't have to actually climb anything. Like, they could have just had a machine in the middle of the room.
Yeah, but even if there was this amazing machine that the production people found, the scientist guy could have like put something in the way to make him trip in there and then close it and turn it on. Like, he didn't have to do this like, yeah, you'll be safe in here. I'll hide somewhere else. Really? Like, come on.
He's like, how come you're not hopping in here with me? Hey, why are you not?
It's not a good movie. It's not.
Never use a time machine you can't control from within it.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Never have another guy close in your time machine. That's just bad. That's just bad.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Time Pop. Until next time, I am Desmond McNeese.
I am Ariel Glott.
And I'm Scott Lifton.
Bye-bye now. When there's nothing else left, you travel back in time.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.